From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Between the major networks and Netflix, HBO Go, Amazon, Hulu, the number of TV shows available to watch has gotten a bit, well, overwhelming. These days, TV shows premiere year-round, but the fall rollout still turns heads. On screens this fall, a talking horse, a look at 1970s Times Square, and plenty of nostalgia. Reboots of Will and Grace, Star Trek, even Dynasty. This hour on Point, top critics talk what to and what not to watch this fall TV season. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What fall TV shows are you looking forward to? The Deuce? BoJack Horseman? Let us know. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us now from Los Angeles is Lorraine Ali, television critic for the Los Angeles Times. Lorraine, it's terrific to have you with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you. And with us from New York is Matt Zoller-Seitz, television critic for New York Magazine and its entertainment vertical, Vulture. Matt, thank you very much for joining us again. Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
So, should we care about any particular season of the year now, Lorraine, or is it all year round? Things seem to be dropping from the skies. Is there a cluster in the fall?
You know, it is really all year round in terms of the quality of shows dropping. And why the fall is still sort of something that we look at is it's really when the networks release their shows. So it's still, you know, predominantly the larger chunk of shows that get released are in the fall, but those are the network shows. So all year round is when you're getting everything from streaming platforms, cable platforms. So really the fall season's kind of mattering less and less.
Matt, what do you like this fall?
Very little. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of it yet, but I usually by this point during the year, I'm more excited. There's three or four things that I'm really excited about, and that's not the case. And some of the stuff that's already debuted hasn't done a whole lot for me. A lot of the returning shows I'm quite interested in. And some of the things that premiered over the summer I think are at least really interesting, like The Deuce on HBO. But, I think a big part of the problem is the disproportionate share of the attention, the marketing attention, the media attention is still going to broadcast shows, and they're, for the most part, more timid than maybe ever before.
I mean, Lorraine, when we say TV these days, I guess I no longer think of it as just network. I think of it, or broadcast. It seems to encompass everything. But is that fair? Is it? It almost encompasses even YouTube these days.
Oh no, that's absolutely fair. I mean, that is what the TV experience is now. It's all sorts of different platforms, and I think you know when we're talking about fall preview, fall season, it's kind of limiting because we are just talking about network and it isn't the most creative. I mean, this season, it's just like reboots, revivals, spinoffs. It's all pretty familiar stuff.
So when you say network, do you include HBO in that? Matt mentioned The Deuce. That's where The Deuce comes out on HBO.
Yeah, The Deuce does come out. And I mean, I agree. I think that's the thing I'm probably more excited about. But the majority of the shows, of the new shows coming out this fall are broadcast network shows. You know, The Deuce is one of them, but that is on cable.
We're not going to restrict ourselves to a handful of networks here. There's so much coming out. Let's think about The Deuce for a minute. I mean, David Simon created The Wire, together with crime novelist George Pelicanos, who also wrote for The Wire, and also for Tremé, which is another one of Simon's creations. They are back together for this thing. You've got 1970s New York City, Times Square, which has always had peep shows and all the rest, sort of morphing, evolving into what would become the porno industry. James Franco plays twin entrepreneurs here. Maggie Gyllenhaal is in. I got a little bit of sound here. This is a scene from the pilot. You got characters Candy and Thunder Thighs, prostitutes, played by Maggie Gyllenhaal and Pernell Walker. They meet Lori, played by Emily Mead, who's new to town. Here they are on the streets of 1970s Times Square waiting for customers.
Your Thunder Thighs, as advertised.
Hey, give me one of those, will you? TC said I should come rap to you all the time, get myself up to speed. Thanks, Sugars.
What's your name, girl?
Lori. You?
Candy.
You got not new in town, stamped on your forehead.
Loreen Ali, when David Simon comes into something, we have high expectations. What's he shooting for here? What's he achieve?
Well, you know, first off, the recreation of that area around Times Square in the 70s is phenomenal. I mean, it is so skeezy. It is so dirty. Yeah. It's just these terrible little motel rooms. It is pretty phenomenal. I have to say, I was a little leery about it going in just because of the subject matter and just because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm so tired of seeing women in the role of prostitutes and, you know, porn stars. But to their credit, I mean, as they did with The Wire, there is so much nuance here and it is so well done that they sort of blow apart all those stereotypes. And I think they also do that, you know, you have black pimps in this, which kind of ring out to an older stereotype of the Huggy Bear character. They really sort of put some nuance in that, too. So I think it's a really, really solid series from what I've seen so far.
You've got female directors on this. I think the woman who directed Breaking Bad had directed the pilot.
Yes. Yeah, correct. And there's more female directors on this as well, which I think makes a difference in terms of when you're looking at the porn industry, because it's through the female gaze rather than the male gaze, which we're used to seeing that. So, you know, they're looking at a industry that exploited women, but they're not exactly exploiting them in the deuce, which is really interesting.
Matt, I mean, you're there in New York, Times Square. It may be hard for some people to, well, maybe many never knew when Times Square was so skeezy, as Lorraine absolutely accurately puts it. Now that it's all up on steroids and it's so flash these days, how do you think it does at capturing that 1970s Times Square, which was really a raggedy, kind of skeezy locale?
Oh, I think the production values are tremendous, and that's, you know, and I would expect that from HBO, the home of shows like Game of Thrones and Boardwalk Empire and Westworld. But I admire this show, but I find it very difficult to really enthusiastically endorse at this point. I mean, just the first few episodes that I've seen. The issue that I have with it is, you know, Lorraine talked about how the show has a female gaze. I think that's true directorially and also in other ways, such as Maggie Gyllenhaal wanting to sign on as a producer in order to protect the integrity of her character and make sure that she didn't become passive. That's all great, but it's still written by, mainly by a guy. And he's a great writer, but, you know, the point of view of the show, I don't think is that. I don't think it says, I don't know how to put this, but there's a way in which even when you're scrupulously depicting the kind of multi-layered nature of a scene like the one in Times Square in the 70s, you're still seeing like images of like pimps terrorizing prostitutes and white guys kind of lording it over black men and women. And in the context of HBO generally having had a problem with that, traditionally, I don't know that it's such a step up. You know, I'm slightly out of step with my colleagues on this. Everybody I know really, really loves the show, and I just think it's, you know, it's worth talking about. I'm glad it's on the air and we can argue about it, but I'm not seeing another Wire or Treme at this point.
Matt Zoller cites writing that the 70s was the last era, and that's where this is placed, of course, in which men could be macho, women and people of color, quote-unquote, knew their place, casual sex wasn't freighted with fear of terminal illness, and you could say anything that popped into your head without fear of censure. Here's another little bit from The Deuce, David Simon's 1970s Times Square. You've got Abby, a college student played by Margarita Leviatva, asking Vincent, and this is one of the characters played by James Franco, why he makes his female employees dress in tight clothes.
Ever wonder what it's like for them to be objectified?
Objecto who? You gotta slow down, kid. Just a guinea from Brooklyn.
It means treating a person as a thing. Ever wonder what they think about that?
I don't know what they think. All I know is they made more money tonight than any night in here in months.
Lorraine, you're giving it a little more love than Matt here.
Well, I mean, I'd have to argue that, you know, we're looking at some of those things that they're showing here were realities on the ground. I mean, mm-hmm. when we look at our, you know, we look at how we see it today is very different how it was then. And yes, a lot of it's really ugly and a lot of it, you know, objectifies women and a lot of it's sort of looking at those stereotypes. But like these things did exist at the time, and you have to think about The Wire. Like, you could argue the same with The Wire in the beginning, but as it rolled forward, and it's seasons and seasons of setup, which I feel like The Deuce could have as well. You know, it starts to really dissect these characters, and you see that it's much more than, you know, whatever it is on the surface layers that sort of caused the offense in the first place. So I would argue that, yeah, it makes me queasy in some ways, and it makes me sort of back up a little bit. But then I'm like, no, there's more to it than this.
You think we're going to end up knowing, if it goes for some seasons, how we got where we are now by looking at the birth of the porno industry in Times Square in the 70s?
I feel like that's a really good point. I feel like that's what it's setting up to do. I mean, where it goes, I don't know. But I mean, I feel like it's smart enough that it's setting up to sort of go that way. Because in looking back at, you know, some of those, you're looking at right before this sort of real estate boom in Times Square, and you're just kind of looking at how things rolled into where they are now.
We're going to look at The Deuce and more coming out in the fall TV season, if we can call it that, and by no means restricted to broadcast network television, with Lorraine Ali, TV critic for the Los Angeles Times, and with us from NPR West in Culver City, California, Matt Zoller-Seitz, TV critic for New York Magazine and Vulture, with us from New York. We go out with the theme song from Stranger Things, back on Netflix, October 27th. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's on TV this fall. The stars, the hot topics, the nostalgia, the good, the bad. Matt Zoller-Seitz is with us from New York Magazine, and Vulture joins us from New York City. Lorraine Ali is with us from Culver City, California, TV critic for the Los Angeles Times. Behind us right there, as if we never said goodbye, the cast of Will and Grace performs. In the trailer for the series reboot, the show comes back on September 28th on NBC. You can join us this hour. What are you ready to watch this fall? Are you watching, going to watch The Deuce, Stranger Things, BoJack Horseman, Law & Order, True Crime, The Menendez Brothers, Ken Burns, The Vietnam War? Are you in nostalgia mode for Dynasty again? Will & Grace again? More Star Trek? And what are Will & Grace going to talk about now that being openly gay isn't such a big deal anymore? Lauren in New Orleans is calling. Hi, Lauren. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I just had a comment. I watch a lot of HBO shows. I'm a big fan of the network, and of course, The Wire, The Corner, Treme, all of the other shows. And so I was excited to watch the premiere of Deuce. But I did want to echo what one of the TV critics just made a comment on in terms of the way that the African American characters are portrayed in The Deuce. I am excited to see the way that women are portrayed, but it struck me the way that the male characters were portrayed in terms of the brutality, kind of the lack of thought, and almost treated sometimes in a comical manner. And I'm hoping that as the show goes on, they flesh out those characters more. But as of right now, it really was kind of striking and disturbing when I first saw it.
Lauren, stick with us for a second. Let me put that to Lorraine, if I may. I mean, you're saying, Lorraine, well, it's the 1970s. But, you know, Lauren's watching it and thinking, wow, I feel put it sounds like characters put back in stereotype boxes.
It, you know, I agree with the first, with the pilot episode. Yes, I agree. I mean, I felt the same way. I mean, I've seen 5 episodes in now, and, you know, as it unfolds, that's why I was saying I was queasy at first with it, because it was like, oh, I don't really like how they're playing on these stereotypes. I don't know, maybe if that was even intentional, like, look, here's a stereotype you're used to seeing. And as it rolls on, these characters begin to unfold and you realize, of course, there's more to it. Of course there is. So it's almost like they're playing with that idea and breaking it down as they move on. But I agree, if you had just seen the first episode so far, I would feel the same way.
Lauren, you're in New Orleans. You saw Tremé. You probably saw The Wired. You've seen David Simon's work. Are you willing to hang in there and wait and see how it evolves? Or it's like, oh, no, thanks.
Oh, yeah. I'll hang in to see how it evolves. I mean, I'm a fan of the work, but I am definitely hoping and looking forward to seeing those characters fleshed out in a way that's a little less superficial and more true to actually the context of what was going on in the 70s around African-American life and culture.
And there was a lot going on. So please, 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 from New Orleans there. Appreciate your call, Lauren. Joe in Columbia, South Carolina. Joe, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. What are you watching?
Hi, Tom. Actually, I'm watching a lot of shows. One of the big things that I'm really excited for is the second season of Stranger Things, but also in a bit of nostalgia mode with, I don't know, The Tick on Amazon came out where they had 6 episodes come out. The Orville kind of reminds me of Galaxy Quest, the old movie. and 2 decades of South Park that came out when I was in high school. And that's just the quality of the storytelling of TV shows that I'm watching just seems to be the antithesis of the summer blockbuster movies, which don't do a good job of doing storytelling and even promoting villains.
What do you like about Stranger Things, Joe? This is the show centered in this little small town in Indiana. A boy named Will has disappeared into a mysterious alien area called the Upside Down. Plays a lot on, in this case, 80s nostalgia. What do you like about it?
Well, I grew up in the 80s in Northeast Ohio, actually, and this reminds me a lot of home and growing up, and just, you know, the kids just remind me of my childhood growing up. You know, I was kind of a geek slash outcast, you know, playing Dungeons and Dragons and a few of the other things. So just a lot of it resonates with me and just kind of the suspense movies of the time where, you know, there really wasn't a lot of gore, but there was a lot of like innuendo as to that stuff. So it's fun to watch because it's, you know, it's scary, but at the same time, it's not gruesome. They're over the top.
Joe, we'll pick it up. Here's a little bit from the trailer for the second season of Stranger Things. That boy named Will is back in Indiana, but the strange things in this upside-down territory are still terrorizing him. Here from the trailer, set to Michael Jackson's, talk about the 80s, Thriller.
Whatever is happening is spreading from this place.
What does it want? Not me, everyone else.
What does it want? Not me, everyone else. Matt, Stranger Things, what do you say?
I love Stranger Things. I love Stranger Things. And I find myself arguing about the show a lot with my film critic friends. I write about film and television simultaneously, and the TV people love Stranger Things for the most part, as well they should, I think. But the movie people are very protective of it because they think it's too aware of references and too much of an 80s nostalgia fest and, you know, too much like, oh, I love John Carpenter, I love Steven Spielberg, but I love all that stuff. And I love the period. That's my period, you know? I mean, I was a teenager in 1983. I was slightly older than the kids on the show, but I watched the show with my son, who is now 12 years old, and we really bonded over it. And he's a much tougher critic than I am, I gotta say. He doesn't like anything, but he loved that. And I'm looking forward to season 2.
Lorraine, you've been writing about how nostalgia plays a big role here. Is nostalgia what pushes people toward Stranger Things, or is it the, spookiness?
I think it's a combination of both those things. I mean, 80s nostalgia is big right now. You know, you have it there. You have the reboot with Dynasty. You had, you know, Snowfall.
That kind of blows my mind
80s.
that's back. That's just unbelievable.
I know. I'm like, what's next, Dallas? But yeah, I mean, I think definitely nostalgia and the whole idea of it definitely feeling like E.T., the kids on bikes and those puffy down vests. You know, I think that certainly helps it. But I do think it's got a great sort of, as the caller said, take on the sci-fi experience without it being super gruesome. It's still kind of fun and playful, and it's still slightly naive, you know, and I think it's nice to feel like we don't know everything yet, you know, or that we still sort of are tumbling into things without thinking we know everything.
Dynasty, of all things, back on October 11th on the CW. Here's a scene from the pilot. Fallon Carrington, remember the name Carrington, played by Elizabeth Gillies, learns that her soon-to-be stepmom Crystal stole the job in the family business that she covets. They fight.
Fallon, that is no way to talk to your new boss. That's right. He offered me the COO position.
That was supposed to be mine.
Which is why I turned it down the first time. Then I met you.
Oh, boy. Soap opera back. I mean, of all things to come back, I guess everything, anything can come back. But that just seems like kind of mind-blowing that Dynasty would come back to me, Lorraine.
Yeah. I mean, it just sounds like there's just as much treachery and right. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying about this season, though. I mean, with the reboots and the sort of revisiting things, it's not the most creative choice to bring that back. And also it's because it's a sort of serial drama. I don't know. It just seems really dated to bring back now. And I would be really surprised if it does well.
Joe mentioned The Orville. This is came out September 10th. Fox, a new kind of science fiction / comedy called a cross between Star Trek and Family Guy. And here's a scene from the pilot. Funny man Seth MacFarlane, who plays the captain of an exploratory vessel and who created the show, finds out who his first officer will be.
The captain does not appear to be pleased at the arrival of his first officer.
They were married.
No way.
You know how many times I tried to talk to you?
You were hearing me, or you weren't around at all, but I did try.
I was the one who suggested couples counseling.
The therapist was your brother-in-law.
This should be a really fun trip for all of us.
Perhaps we should not be talking about this.
Oh, no. We're talking about this. This is a thing.
First officer, his ex-wife, Matt, the Orville. What about the Sean, Seth MacFarlane here?
I'm really not a Seth MacFarlane fan. I'm just going to come out and say it. And I think that, there's a few clips from The Family Guy that still make me laugh. But this Fox has got this kind of Seth MacFarlane factory going, and I'm really just not into it. And I think there's another problem, which is that Seth MacFarlane has in recent years begun to make what I call the Mel Brooks mistake, which is he's looking at the success of what he's done, and he's assuming that what people respond to is him. And, you know, rather than the material that he's writing or that he's sort of facilitating. And I don't like him as a leading man. I don't like having his sort of personal sensibility all over everything. And I don't like the Orville. I also feel like in a world as Galaxy Quest, what do we need that for?
I mean, Lorraine, I don't know if you've seen the Orville. It leans awfully hard on sending up Star Trek.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, you know, I think in that clip you played, they said something like, you know, this should be a fun ride, and it should be, and it's not. It's just a lot of really lowbrow humor. And it is, you know, doing little plays on Star Trek, just as we were talking about Stranger Things, sort of referencing, you know, things from E.T. But it's just not smart, and it's just not funny. And given all the great comedies we have now across all platforms, it's got to up the game, and it really doesn't.
Maybe it'll be a short ride and done. Barbara in Lexington, Kentucky. Barbara, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, hello, Tom.
Hi.
My favorite show that I'm really looking forward to is This Is Us. I didn't know anything about it until late this summer, and a friend recommended it, and I had to binge watch the first season, and I'm hooked. I can't wait for it to come back, and it's an amazing show. It covers all sorts of issues, 30 years ago, present day. It is really good.
Yeah, and others think so as well, clearly. 11 Emmy nominations here. Lorraine, can you tell us about This Is Us?
Yeah, you know, This Is Us, obviously it is starring Sterling K. Brown, who did The People versus O.J., I think it was last year or the year before, won a bunch of at least nominations and awards for it. It is a drama that sort of mirrors a lot of the traditional family dramas that we've seen, but with really modern twists in it. But what's really nice about it is it's got a really good sort of familiar feeling to it. And ultimately, you really like the characters and you really feel like you're kind of embracing the characters. It's like a big old hug from the characters. And I think that's really resonated, especially now when there's just so much divisiveness and kind of cynicism.
11
so
Emmy
it,
nominations.
It stamps that out.
Yeah. Here's just a bit from This Is Us. Rebecca, played by Mandy Moore, surprises her son Randall, played by Sterling K. Brown, with some frank talk about how she and Randall's father decided to adopt him. She says it was all because of his father.
He pushed a stranger on me. And that stranger became my child. And that child became my life. He became you.
Heartstrings plucked. Herbert in Lexington, Kentucky. Herbert, you're on. What are you watching?
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good.
Good. Well, I'm actually watching BoJack Horseman right now. Excellent show. Every season, I really wait for it to come out. I think it's a great show because it really does an excellent job of, even though it's animated, representing mental illness and kind of the difficulties of dealing with it, even when, like the main character, you have everything going for you.
BoJack Horseman, and I have to admit that this has passed me by. Everybody talks about it. It's got a lot of fans. Matt Zoller-Seitz, you've got this is a animation, and you've got the main character, Will Arnett voices, this cartoon horse, a washed-up sitcom star with depression and a rough relationship with his mother. And people love it.
Yeah, I just actually coincidentally wrote a big piece about it that went up this morning. I think this new season, season four, is the best one that they've done. And considering how much they're like previous seasons, that's saying quite a bit. But among the many things that I like about it, it's that it fills that Mad Men-sized hole in my heart. And it sounds very strange to say something like that when you're talking about a series that's filled with anthropomorphized animals in a kind of a showbiz satire, but the main character, BoJack Horseman, does have some similarities with like a Don Draper type. But the show has a philosophy, it has a worldview, and it is a very compassionate show at the same time that it's extremely wacky and it goes for animal puns. And,
yeah.
You know, BoJack's agent is a cat, and you see her bookshelf, and it has books like Persepolis on it, P-U-R-R. You know, like, it's not above making a joke that corny.
Right.
But at the same time, it'll do something like a flashback episode where we learn about the entire history of BoJack's mother and her family, which tells us how she got to be such a ungiving person right at the moment when he's about to put her in a retirement home. And he has not been privy to any of that stuff. Like, we know it and he doesn't. And the way that the show tears at our sympathies, I think, is quite extraordinary.
Here's a moment that the 11th episode, new season, BoJack takes his mom, who has dementia, to a nursing home. The room is empty and bare. Don Draper, kind of dream sequence almost moment here. In a touching moment, he tries to comfort her.
I don't understand. Where am I?
You're in Michigan.
Michigan?
Yeah, at the lake house.
I am?
And it's a warm summer night in... The fireflies are dancing in the sky, and your whole family is here, and they're telling you that everything is going to be all right.
Yes, that's right.
The son trying very hard to comfort the mother with some imagination there. Lorraine Ali, this fills a madman-sized hole in Matt's heart. that could be a big hole.
I'm not as invested in it. And, I have to admit, I haven't like followed it super closely. What I really like about it because I am here in L.A., is that it really satirizes Hollywood celebrity culture. Just sort of L.A. culture, the sort of narcissism, but also the dashed dreams. A once big actor now. So all of that I love. The rest of it, meh.
Meh. Okay, we'll take that. Curb Your Enthusiasm comes back on October 1st on HBO. We'll look at that and much more. We've got Ken Burns, the Vietnam War, the Menendez brothers back in a new telling this season. Lorraine Ali with the LA Times. Please stand by there in California. Matt Zoller-Seitz with New York Magazine and Vulture. We're looking at the fall TV season. What's bringing out all the military shows this fall? The Brave, Valor, The Long Road Home, SEAL Team. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, talking this hour about what's on TV this fall. TV, of course, has a very wide definition these days, from network and broadcast all the way across streaming and almost all the way to YouTube these days. Lots of things on YouTube grow up fast and become television shows. Lorraine Ali is with us. She's TV critic for the Los Angeles Times. Matt Zoller-Seitz is with us from New York Magazine and Vulture. Little theme there from Scandal behind us. Returns to ABC for its seventh and final season. You can join us. What are you looking forward to? Where do your TV tastes run these days? What does it satisfy in you? What does it not? Ken Burns is out with a big 18-hour documentary on, well, called The Vietnam War. I don't know how much of it you've managed to see, but there's a lot of expectation about this. Matt Zoller-Seitz, what do you make of what Ken Burns is up to this time? Will it be familiar, starting with sort of the approach to the Civil War? Are we in the same vein here with the Vietnam War?
Well, we're always kind of in the same vein with Ken Burns. And one of the things that's been to watch over the last decade or so is he's moved away from really earlier eras of American gotten more recent, and that means that he's had to make some choices of am I going to let the pictures move this time, you know, like things like that, things that most documentarians don't trouble themselves with. I haven't started watching the Vietnam War documentary yet. I'm going to take a whack at that later today. But I love Ken Burns. I love Ken Burns. I think he's
losing that line a little bit. Let's listen to a little bit from premieres on September 17th, so right in front of us now on PBS, of course, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's 10-part, 18-hour documentary series telling the epic story of the Vietnam War. A little clip from the trailer here.
I thought I knew most of what was worth knowing about the war, and suddenly I didn't.
Something was happening that was profound, that was irreversible.
What was it all about? Was it worth it?
Smart people in pinstripes could make their minds up about the war.
It was extremely traumatic, like the ground was suddenly cut from under you.
Lorraine Ali, I mean, nostalgia is surely the wrong word here, and yet we're at a moment where people are looking for perspective on where we are and where we've been.
Yeah, and I think that's why the timing on this is so, I mean, I think it's what I've seen so far, I think it's incredibly moving, and it's also incredibly timely, because, you know, you're talking about this really tangled period in recent American history, and a war that where the boundaries were really unclear, and some people don't even know, did we come out victorious, did we not? And I think, you know, now we can all kind of relate to that with being in Iraq, Afghanistan, and I think it really sort of resonates in that way. And also, you're talking about a time period where there was a lot of social upheaval, in terms of just like race and ideas about the war and divisiveness.
Huge.
Liberal, conservative. Yeah. So I think it really touches on all those things and does it very well from what I've seen. And I think it will really resonate now. I think it's phenomenal, and it's also really heartbreaking.
Is it aimed at boomers looking back to the memories of their youth, or will it capture the interest, do you think, of a new generation who had no nanosecond of life during the Vietnam War, Lorraine?
You know, going in, that's a good point. I thought that it would be more aimed at boomers, but actually, just watching what I did watch, I do think it will resonate with younger people, whether you're talking about millennials or, you know, even Gen X. I think that because of those themes that I mentioned, they're very, very, you know, in the present. They're very, very right now. So I think, and it's also we're talking about young people going to war. I mean, so I don't think the era really matters. I mean, I think that to identify, these are people in their 20s, some of them in their late teens going to war. So I do think it will resonate beyond the boomers.
I mean, there's lots of military shows out there that, I guess, remind us of how much military action has continued to be a part of American life. I've got a little bit from here, the National Geographic premiere of The Long Road Home. This comes early November, miniseries based on Martha Raddatz's best-selling book of the same name chronicles the events of April 4th, 2004, some call it Black Sunday, when a U.S. Army platoon was ambushed just outside of Baghdad. Here's a clip from the trailer.
You make memories on those days like April 4th that you never forget about, no matter how much you want to.
They're a drama, I mean, you could say, ripped from the headlines. The headline's now more than a decade old, but the war theme is all around us. And military shows, Lorraine, abundant in this season. Yeah, they really are. And I was surprised when I saw that because I thought, you know, with everything we've been paying attention to, I mean, North Korea, yes, has been coming up now, but I would say in the last year, it's been much more about domestic politics. Mm-hmm. And now you have, you know, at least four major dramas pretty much reaching back to the Middle East in one way or another, whether it's covert operations, whether it's looking back to the 2004 and the invasion of Baghdad. Well, you got NBC's The Brave, Long Road Home, CW's Valor, CBS SEAL Team. They're promoting like crazy. That's right. Yeah. And I mean, among those, I would definitely say the Long Road Home, the Nat Geo series is the best. I think it really sort of gets at how unprepared, you know, the U.S. was when they went into Baghdad of what they were going to find in Sadr City. And I don't think it just shows how they thought they were going in for a rebuilding mission, having no idea what the divisions there were, mm-hmm. what they were going to face. And there was an ambush. And it's done really well. And I have to say, I'm pretty sensitive to these types of things. I am half Iraqi. I am Muslim. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the characters in all of these war series, the enemy is Muslim. And I have to say, this year, looking at these shows coming up, they have taken definitely steps to show that they're all the Muslim characters aren't just the bad guys. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of impressed with that. Matt, every generation has its depiction of the military. I mean, it's not always a cookie cutter. You can get send-ups and more serious treatment at the same time. I don't know how many of these you've managed to get a look at, but as we think about the Vietnam War and then these depicting Americans in much more recent military engagements, can you characterize, is there a sort of common characterization?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the default of almost every military show is what ultimately matters is the person or usually the man next to you. It's about, you know, looking out for your buddies and going back for your buddies and all of that kind of stuff, which is great on an emotional level. But most war TV shows, like most war movies, tend to lack a larger context. And that's why I tend to prefer documentaries to scripted shows in that respect. And there's been very, very few shows about war that I think have been even worth watching, let alone talking about. And when you get something like A China Beach, which was a Vietnam War show that aired in the 80s, or a MASH, which oddly was set during the Korean War, but really felt more like it was about Vietnam. And as it went on and stretched out over 11 years, it felt like it was set in a Samuel Beckett play almost. Those were all excellent, but I don't really have any faith in CBS to do anything good related to the current conflicts. Just look at their crime shows, you know? I mean, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the war shows, the military shows are not the only ones kind of ripped from the headlines. You've got NBC coming out after the big OJ reenactment drama success. They're coming out with Law & Order True Crime, the Menendez murders. This is September 26th. Some will remember in 1989 you had Lyle and Eric Menendez. They were convicted of murdering their wealthy parents. It was a headline-making trial aired on Court TV in the NBC version. Edie Falco plays their defense attorney, Leslie Abramson. Here's a little bit from her in the trailer.
At the heart of the story, these boys were just little children, and they suffered years of abuse. What these boys did is not the issue. It's why they did it.
Lorraine, have you seen it? Does it stack up to the success that people found in going back to the OJ trial? I've only seen clips of it. You know, the OJ... People versus OJ was pretty phenomenal. I think it's going to be really hard to top that. But then again, this has got Edie Falco, which is Sopranos, Nurse Jackie. Yeah. And she's phenomenal. So, you know, I do have kind of high hopes for this. And again, if you look at this, it is tugging at the 80s nostalgia again. Because if you just even look at the clips, there's like the big shoulder pads and the bad hair. So even though it is about crime, yes, it really is. And our fascination with it, it's still got all those 80s trimmings. Will and Grace comes back for another turn. And of course, that was built on them breaking all kinds of precedents when it came to talking about
gay life and people being out and not being out. And here we are years after Will and Grace first hit the stage. Big changes in the culture in terms of acceptance and openness about gay life. How's it work? Does it work, Matt?
Well, I haven't seen the reboot, but it'll be a success. I'm sure people will love it. I mean, it seems like there's been very few reboots that I think people have been unsatisfied with. Occasionally get something like Gilmore Girls or the first Arrested Development. I hear they're working on a fifth season now, which didn't make everyone happy, but it still kind of pushed the nostalgia buttons. And I honestly don't think it's going to matter if the new Will and Grace is any good. Anybody who is a big fan of that show is going to watch it. And it seems like a pretty safe bet if you're going to reboot something to reboot that.
Lorraine, what's your expectation from the glimpses that we've seen in the trailer and promotional material about how they handle the way the world has changed?
Yeah, I think what's going to be interesting about this is how they're addressing how the world has changed, because and also how they're addressing the Trump era, because many shows, and we joke about this at work, will not say the T word. They won't mention Trump, even if they're shows that can react quickly to the headlines.
Why not?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I wonder if it is a for fear of, you know, alienating audiences. You know, America's pretty divided. Do they want to play on that divide? Do they want to just be, you know, reach out to as many people as possible? I'm not sure. Or the other thing is I wonder if they're concerned about timelines, because things are so tumultuous in Washington. If they say Trump in an episode, you know, that they taped this week, will it still be relevant 2 weeks from now?
Pence,
I think that's an issue.
Who knows? Who knows? Alex in Warren, Michigan. Alex, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Hey, you guys.
Hi.
I got a quick comment about the new Star Trek Discovery, which you guys' opinions on it going digital. It's on CBS All Access, like your Hulu and your Netflix streaming services. And I feel like that would really hurt the long-term fans since the 60s. They want it to be on television, and I don't think they're up to paying another service on top of Netflix and Hulu to watch the new series.
Well, I mean, this raises interesting questions on all sides. Let's listen to just a little bit from it. It comes out September 24th, Star Trek Discovery, CBS All Access. New cast is diverse, includes, speaking of Will and Grace, includes an openly gay couple, and there are familiar storylines from the franchise.
The Klingon Empire has been in disarray for generations.
We've encountered them.
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
Captain, incoming!
Sounds familiar, Star Trek Discovery. Matt Zoller Seitz, is that the play here? You got to pay for this, you got to pay for that, and now you've got to pay more to see the Star Trek reboot here?
Yeah, a lot of media companies are doing this. They've looked at the success of Netflix and said, we need to break off a piece of that, and we don't want to just be part of Hulu either. I question whether or not we've already reached our limit with the number of subscriptions that people are going to pay for. I mean, I think a sort of niche programming exclusively devoted to horror, I think that could maybe work with people who have a pretty narrow focus and what they prefer. But I don't think this is going to work. I just don't. When people pay, anywhere from $50 to $100 or even $200 a month, if you have a family, for a phone, there is a sensibility of, I already paid for my entertainment. Why should I have to keep paying for it?
Yeah.
And I get it. I get it. I also understand how expensive it is to make a show like Star Trek. And needing to pay for that, I get that too, but I just think it's unrealistic.
We've got Transparent, Better Things, Outlander on people's screens again here. What else would we be thinking about, Lorraine, that we haven't touched on for people thinking about their fall menu?
Well, there's something new coming out. It's Mike Judge, Tales from the Tour Bus, and it's Cinemax. And I think it could be really funny. It's animated. It's early here, you guys.
Yeah, we know. We got it.
But it's sort of like a drunk history type of setup where there are real stories about real music artists on the road, and then they animate them. And it looks hysterical. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, you're talking about bands on the road and semi-animated,
yes,
whatever that means.
And so they take some epic stories from the annals of rock and roll and beyond, and take us in.
Yes, and it's almost and you have all sorts of people narrating it. Some of the artists, some of them not. So I think it'll be really funny in a sort of way that Drunk History is funny.
I'm up for that. Anything else to leave us with, Matt, that we might want to keep an eye on?
Yeah, I think I'm actually recommending that people take this opportunity to go back and revisit some old shows that they might have missed, or some shows that they meant to keep up on but didn't. And I recently caught up with Halt and Catch Fire, the AMC show, which is a show that I dropped out of after season one because I wasn't happy with where it was going, and boy, did it become a good show. And that experience was so positive that I'm actually going back and looking up more shows and catching up with them. So, you know, I say give that a shot.
Never a mistake. I loved High Maintenance. I loved Insecure and Issa Rae. Pretty great. We'll look for more of that down the road. It's great talking with the two of you, and I'm really grateful to you for walking us through what's in front of us right now. Matt Zoller-Seitz at New York Magazine and Vulture with us from New York City. Thank you very much for being with us, Matt.
Thank you.
And Lorraine Ali, TV critic for the LA Times. It's great to make your acquaintance, Lorraine. Please come again. Love talking with you.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
Listeners, have a good old time on whatever you call TV this fall. Here's the theme from The Deuce, David Simons. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.